Welcome to Talking Agility, a podcast from Accenture. Your host is Elitsa Necheva.
Over the last five episodes, we've been exploring enterprise agility from a number of angles. We've looked at the data behind successful business transformations, discussed the evolution of agility from its early days in IT to enterprise agility, and we looked at the importance of vision and leadership in surviving and navigating disruption. Today, I'm speaking with Neil Garten. Neil is the head of CRM at RBS, where he is responsible for delivering business outcomes across sales and services.
I would jump to our first question for today and would appreciate if you can start by telling us about your own experience with enterprise agility and agile adoption and what benefits do you see for yourself?
Certainly. So just to give you a bit of background, I work alongside a CRM program for the Royal Bank of Scotland that's transitioning towards the agile ways of working. And I work with the team to help deliver business outcomes and also undertake the product owner role. And I'm fairly new to Agile, if I'm honest, but I'm really excited by the opportunity to deliver efficiently and accurately for our customers. And therefore, personally, I'm embracing all opportunities to develop myself and my team in this area. So I'm always keen to learn something new or new to me. And then if it makes sense, put it into practice. And obviously, Agile and enterprise agility makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of empirical evidence around the difference that it's made. I think the three benefits that I'd call out so far in the journey that I've been on are around the behavioural, the test and learn approach. Mm-hmm. I think traditionally in a lot of organisations, we get bring me perfection, bring me when it's done, show me the finished article. Well, I think with Agile, it's show me your workings, test and learn. Apple, as we know, are kind of measure twice and cut once organization, whereas Google tend to take a more iterative approach. Yeah. Large financial institutions will be probably in the former. So to change over is a big behavioral change, and that takes a lot of empowerment and a lot of trust. I think the second benefit I would see is the speed of delivery. So the ability to get to a minimum viable product far quicker and then colour it in much quicker than we would have done under a waterfall delivery. So it's the speed of delivery is down to months instead of years.
Yeah.
And then you can get your business outcomes far quicker for the company and more importantly for your customers. And I think the third one I'd call out would be financial. So it's the better value for money for the time and cost invested to get your solution out the door. So you're more efficient with the company's capital. And I think all that leads to confidence and reputation of the program that you're working with.
Yeah.
So the outputs, one of the sort of byproducts would be raising the confidence of your stakeholders and the reputation of the team that you're working in because they deliver more regularly. And if there are any challenges, then you're more fleet of foot. You can answer those, correct those, and move forward into the next stages of your delivery.
Mm-hmm. That's very relevant. And I would also reflect on the third point around the financial benefit is oftentimes, and I think we've covered in previous episodes where we say instead of using the pot of money that you're given or the finances to release something that would take 1 year to release, actually using the tranche funding to release something in 6 weeks or however long it takes, definitely less than a year. You can then really early make a call. Well, is that thing worth it, the investment? If so, do we need to invest more? Or if it's not worth it, we can actually repurpose those finances into a different project. So it's very much reflect on that third benefit. So these are the three benefits that you have seen, the test and learn approach, the speed of delivery, and the financial ones. But surely you have also come across and noticed some challenges along the way of adopting agility. Is there any one roadblock that you have seen organizations or your organization particularly struggle with?
I think there's a number of challenges. There's no one major blocker. I think there's a number of challenges, and I'll go through those. I think the first would be around providing clarity to everyone concerned. So most information on Agile and enterprise agility is open source how you do it, you can get from the internet, you can get from YouTube. So actually understanding what it is relatively easy. The key for me then is to get the basic structure down into your business and then iterate as you go. So if you wait to perfect how you're going to do it before you start, then you'll never start. So I think that's a challenge, like switching the governance over. Within that, from a waterfall methodology to an agile methodology, will be quite a challenge. How do you transition into, you know, a traditional way of working, which is built up to cover all kinds of areas, protect you from risk? You know, those processes evolved for a reason, and to snap out of those and transition into other ones can provide a challenge, and a challenge for clarity. I think the second bit would be around the capability. So as I said, the structure is very much open source. You can download that from anywhere. So it's actually getting the capability into your team. You need to empower people. You need to give them the structure and then the empowerment to actually run the various meetings and the various sprints and everything else that goes with Agile. And then give them coaching around making the meetings operate effectively. And that's something we do a lot of, is having an Agile coach to work with us to take the theory and put that into practice. One of the key things that shouldn't be an obstacle, it should be an enabler, is bringing your stakeholders with you. So this is where Agile in a program, for example, meets the wider business. There aren't probably many companies that are fully Agile throughout their organization.
Yeah, no, everyone is a Spotify organization, right?
Yeah, so you've got pots of people that are working in a truly Agile way or transitioning to an Agile way, and then you've got the business that is in a completely different way of thinking.
Yeah.
So business stakeholders are traditionally used to seeing the finished article, like I mentioned a minute ago, bring it to me when it's done. They need to trust you that the minimum viable product that you're working on will get enhanced. So is this the only thing I'm going to see, or will I get more from the back of it? So I would just say, you know, not to underestimate the work required, as I say, especially when the company isn't 100% agile.
Sure, sure. I think it's challenging for someone who has been working all their life in a waterfall way to suddenly switch on to this and accept the idea of a minimum viable product and frequent iteration. So there is this whole behavioral and mindset element into that. We can probably safely say that change is not only internal, but also it's driven by outside factors, and one of them being the customer. Ultimately, you know, the most important factor that organizations are considering when they're trying to deliver change. So what, in your view and experience, Neil, is the role of the customer in driving organizational change?
The role of the customer is absolutely huge. I go back to a time where there were four banks on the high street, three television channels that we could watch. And we opened from 9 until 5, and that was what the offering was. And now we find that customer behaviour has changed more in the last 5 years, and probably the last 2 years, as it has in the last 30 years. So a bank and any financial institution has to listen to where the customer is going, what the customer wants, and what the future customer will want as well, and then adapt to that. Because if it doesn't, then it will not remain relevant. So, you know, we know that there are now thousands of financial institutions.
Yeah.
A lot of information about products and services are open source. If you want to understand about life cover, you want to understand about most products, you can find that on the internet. And then you can compare your products on the internet very quickly. So you don't have to go around and go from one organization to the other.
Sure.
So that will drive a lot of changes. And we know our organisations have to make changes to reflect that. The pace of that is going to increase and increase and become even more significant when we go to open banking. So we are there to serve our customers. That's our number one purpose.
Yeah,
absolutely. And therefore, it's keeping an eye on the change in customer behaviour going forward and making sure we meet and exceed that.
And I think it's also very interesting, kind of reflecting on a couple of things that I've come across, is the role that social media plays in the way that organizations are responding to customer requests and behaviors. And not that long ago, there was an example with a fintech institute, well, a fintech organization, which was criticized for the way they delivered some of their advertising. And you could see there was this huge wave of people on Twitter who were disagreeing with the ad and the content of the ad. And straight away, the organization actually had to stop, take change, ultimately take all these requests, add them to their backlog, prioritize the backlog, and respond to what the customer required. And that's just a very small example. But I think ultimately, now that the voice of the customer is really loud with social media being enabled, organizations have to, you know, listen to that sentiment and really reassess it almost every single retrospective what the customer requires. So certainly the voice of the customer is now becoming really, really loud.
Absolutely, and it will be real time. It won't be an annual customer survey.
Yes,
to your point, it will be social media. If 1,000, 10,000 people tweet that your product doesn't work and it needs changing, then it needs to be picked up on and acted really quickly. Yeah. And it needs to be done in a matter of days, not a matter of weeks, and not a matter of months. So get that real time feedback.
And I think as well, customers are getting used to the fact that when a bank launches their mobile application offering, it's not going to have all of the functionalities. It's going to have some functionalities, and then the releases will come later. So I think for me, almost the customer is driving sort of the need for enterprise agility change within the organization, but also the organization is managing the way the customer is receiving this change. So very interesting parallels there.
You're listening to Talking Agility. To learn more and to get in touch with us, visit Accenture.com/talking agility.
Could we now talk a little bit more about the relationship between agility and the journey to the customer?
Absolutely. So agility to me is summed up by collaboration meeting efficiency. So the exam question for me is always, how can we get the right solution to the customer as quickly, as efficiently as possible? So if you take CRM, for example, customer relationship management, the product comes out of the box so that every company that buys CRM fundamentally gets the same box subject to licenses. So the differentiator therefore is how you get your customer your solution to the customer and your solution to the user quicker than everybody else, because every other organization has the same box, they're working to deliver their product. So the key differentiator is how you get there. So for me, I like the parallel to Formula One car racing. So there are 21 races across a season. Every car needs to be ready to race at 2 o'clock on a Sunday. If the car's not ready to race, then you don't get to race. So if it's still in the garage being fixed, or it wasn't fast enough, you don't get to race. So deadlines are a good discipline. People often fear deadlines, but deadlines are a good discipline. All cars are built by the team, predominantly from self-designed parts. So they've got that attitude and that mentality that if the part doesn't exist, they will build it themselves. And the thing I like around agility is at the start of every season, the fastest car is 2 seconds a lap quicker than the slowest car. But by the end of the season, the slowest car has gone through a whole load of developments during that season. And if they raced again, they'd be the same time. So the slowest car has caught up, and therefore the fastest car has to keep pushing to stay ahead. Otherwise, if you stand still, you've been caught up. So there's a phrase in this book by Ross Brawn called Total Competition. No great driver ever outperforms a poor car. And therefore, Formula One is an engineering challenge rather than a human challenge. So the challenge with software technology, especially an out-of-the-box one, is to deploy it faster, better, and cheaper than anyone else. And I think using agile methodologies gives you the opportunity to do that. So for me, financial services has a similar challenge to Formula One, and therefore agile and enterprise agility needs to face outwards versus the other people that have the same car or the same software, and how you deploy yourself and become internally efficient, collaborate better than anyone else to get your car out the door quicker, your software out the door, and delivering business benefit.
That's a really great metaphor, and certainly just thinking about the whole software development cycle from that perspective of, and then remembering that, like you said, if there is a part that doesn't exist, you build it. So you're not, you resolve the blockers yourself. You just don't stop because there is a blocker in the road. So I think that's also really, really important. Then you say that Agile is not new as well. Can you expand for our listeners a little bit on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Agile has been around for a number of years. It's probably been around for a number of decades, mm-hmm. And it's being deployed more and more. But it won't be the last thing, in my view. You know, if I draw a parallel to technology, and I'm going to date myself here in terms of how long I've been in the working world, but I remember fax machines coming in the 1980s, which meant that you used to have the luxury of waiting all day to send something out in the post. Mm-hmm. And now your customer was tapping their finger to say, can you fax it to me, please? So you went from an all-day task to a short task. Then email comes in. I've emailed you. Have you got my email? Then instant messaging comes in. I know you've read my instant message. So ways of working will evolve. You know, brainstorming became a big thing. Mm-hmm. Now it's evolved into co-creation. Face-to-face meetings turn to conference calls, turn to video. And we know that Microsoft, for example, are trying to eliminate emails entirely from their business. Mm-hmm. So printing, if it hasn't been eliminated already, will disappear in the near future. And will anyone type anything? Or will it all be voice? Will we ever have a signature? Will it just be retina or thumbprint?
Yeah.
We know AI will revolutionize the way jobs are done. And most organizations are on that path to simplification, whether that be in the way we work, or in the products and services that we provide. So the job I did when I started in the organisation doesn't exist now, and nor does the one I'm doing exist when I started. So this isn't likely to be the last change we see in the ways of working. And I think it's always tempting to think it is. For me, Agile, the steps in Agile may remain the same, or they may get automated, or they may get removed. And what we consider Agile today will probably seem pedestrian tomorrow. So if I go back to the Formula One analogy, if you go back 20 or 30 years, doing a pit stop where they change four tyres was sounded pretty impressive if you did it in 20 seconds. Now it's done in under two. Yeah. So that's not driven by the team, that's driven by the competition. Somebody else suddenly does 15-second, a 10-second, a 5-second pit stop. You have to improve your ways of working. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're not competitive. And you know, every organisation fundamentally is a competitive organisation versus the marketplace. So I find personally that this is exciting, not daunting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that individually we need to embrace. We need to take personal responsibility for that. But also as leaders, and I would subscribe that there are leaders at all levels in the organisation, clearly not top down, but we need to lead our people through that change as well.
Yeah, and it's something that actually we touched upon in our last episode where we spoke about the analytics behind agility. And my guest, Michael Bozigos, very much was also saying that as leaders, we need to be leading the people through the change. Arguably, the whole behavioral and mindset shift starts with the leader who kind of, you know, infuses the excitement and the good news with the rest of the team who then follow on. I think my last question for our conversation would be around change, and more broadly, we know that change is emerging as a core capability in financial services. But then we also have, and we touched upon it at the beginning, we have also fear and anxiety, which can be a significant inhibitor to change. And fear can ultimately cause organizations to lose their competitive advantage. On the other hand, organizations have developed a really strong culture of trust and they also tend to perform better, is what the statistics are telling us. So to you, how important is building trust for our ability to manage change?
So I think that's a great question. For me, trust is the glue that holds Agile together. I think confidence is the fuel that powers it, and that's all promoted by empowerment. And all of that is enabled by the culture, which is set by the leadership and the individuals within it. So if I go back to something I mentioned earlier around waterfall versus agile. You know, if we think waterfall is trying to future date perfection in an ever-changing world, and at the outset, the stakeholder may think that all their requirements have been captured, But by the time they get to the delivery, their world has changed.
Exactly.
And the solution isn't fit for purpose.
Yeah.
Corrections take months to effect. Trust is absolutely destroyed. Mm-hmm. You know, the stakeholder, the team feel demotivated. Moving on to Agile, you know, the ability to get a core set of requirements, all relevant stakeholders part of the solution, deliver it more rapidly, colour in the solution as you go, and therefore trust and confidence comes from a cadence of successful delivery.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, building trust is a game changer when it comes to agility. The people within the process have to trust each other to complete their part of the process. The team need to convince the stakeholders that while they know the ultimate destination, they'll deliberately only be a short amount of track in front of the train at any one time. So we know the train's going from London to Edinburgh. That's our direction.
Yeah.
However, to be agile, we'll only ever lay a certain amount of track so that we can change direction if we need to while still ending up in Edinburgh. Yeah. So there'll be three things that are really important, which would be leadership, the explicit permission to test and learn, encourage learning from trial and error, really putting that into your team and exhibiting that 24/7 as you go through that process.
Yeah.
I'd say regular retrospectives to improve your processes. And it's moving away from a best practice to finding a good practice and then continually enhancing that best practice. Because you say it's enhancing that good practice, if you say it's best, it implies a limitation. So say it's good and continue to iterate from there.
Yeah.
And lastly, I'd say celebrate success.
Mm-hmm.
So one of my favourite books is Your Best Year Yet by Ginny Ditzler. And in that, she talks about the dangerous shortcut, which is getting to the end of something and moving straight on to the next without celebrating. You know, it's a really tempting thing to do in the pace of the modern world is to go from sprint to sprint, from delivery to delivery, and never say, hey, that was fantastic. So it's taking the lessons learned, but taking the time to celebrate. And whether that be your personal growth, the growth of your business, and in an ideal year, preferably both.
That is really important. I really, really love the 3 points that you mentioned. And around celebrating success, you're right. I think we sort of driven by the goals of the business or driven by the agenda to progress forward. We jump from sprint to sprint to sprint. And it also is arguably applicable to our own lives. And then we sometimes at the end of the sprint, we forget to turn back, do the retrospective, see what worked well, what didn't work so well, what we can improve going forwards, and also acknowledge the good effort of the team, which ultimately we'll still trust. And thank you very much for your time and really, really appreciate your thoughts and insights.
You're welcome.
We talk a lot about agility as a competitive business advantage. But above all, agility is human and it's fundamentally a cultural journey towards agile values. And my conversation today with Neil Garten reminded me really once again that people are at the heart of any major change. Your feedback is important to us, so please visit Accenture.com/talkingagility where you can read more and let us know what you think. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from so you don't miss an episode. I'm Elita Nacheva and I'll speak to you soon. Thank you for tuning in.